Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And together, we make up the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. The Lions are coming off of a big 20-19 victory over the Carolina Panthers. We're
much needed.
Yeah, much needed. We're some kicker hexing. Happened again. They're now the kickers are cursed. It's not just the team, not just the Lions, but the opposing kickers.
Underrated signing. The voodoo witch doctor that Bob Quinn brought in.
Whatever works.
Yeah,
you've got to be trying anything. So on Thursday, for the 79th time, the Lions will play on Thanksgiving Day. This time, hosting at Ford Field every year since 2002. We'll face the Chicago Bears, and we'll talk about that in a minute. We're going to talk about the injuries, and there's a pile of them. Kerryon Johnson, the most important one, the biggest one. We have good news about his knee.
Yeah, we saw him leave in the Panthers game in the third quarter. He, at the end of a run, didn't look like anything serious. Got up, walked off, went to the trainer's table, and then left the trainer's table and went into the locker room. And when that happened, that's when people started to be a little bit concerned. Fortunately, though, he's avoiding surgery. He'll get a knee designation here. And he's apparently week to week, which means we won't see him on Thursday. And it's interesting to see if we will be seeing him
again
the following week against the Rams. But, I don't think it's going to be anything that keeps him out the rest of the year, per se, but week to week is not something that you're anticipating him back anytime soon.
All right, Marvin Jones also with the knee.
Yeah, needed a second opinion, right? We talked about this last week, him getting the initial opinion that said no ACL tear, which was positive news, but now he's sought a second opinion over the weekend, but he was in good spirits. He put out some nice Instagram stuff. Put out some fun stuff on social media, where he looked fine. He was at the game, and he put out a video laughing at the Panthers going for two, and not getting it. So he seems in positive spirits. Short week though makes it really hard for him to probably play this week.
I wouldn't expect him to play.
I'm more optimistic he could play maybe the week after against the Rams.
And now next, that train is never late, Ziggy Ansah, shoulder.
Yeah, the rest of the guys are all limited. And most of them are guys that are either upgraded or they're just staying consistent and they played last week. So the rest of this list is going to be guys that I'm more optimistic about playing. So, yeah, Ansah, of course, limited again.
He's got to make the drive for the contract. He's got to impress a lot of people these last few weeks.
Well, the nice thing is that he's producing on the limited snaps that he has, and those limited snaps have been increasing. The fact that the Lions made a move today to release a defensive end tells me that they're feeling a little bit more confident in Ansah's ability to contribute, and they don't believe he's going to regress, which means hopefully those snap numbers should increase as we go.
All right, next two are defensive tackles. Snacks Harrison, shoulder. A'shaun Robinson, ankle.
Yeah, Snacks played through this last week, and it didn't limit him in any capacity. A'shaun missed, but when I was in Allen Park on Friday, he was on the bike, and now he's had two limited practices. Technically, they haven't really exerted themselves a whole lot with the Thursday game, but they're listing him as limited, which is optimistic, but he still could be. He's probably one of the most biggest question marks, I guess, on this list.
Tight end Michael Roberts, shoulder.
He's the other one that's going to be a little bit, a big question mark. But again, like A'shaun, a limited practice, limited designation means he's trending in the right direction.
Darius Slay, also the knee.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything really big to
knees and shoulders.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of joints rather than like tendons. Only the tendons tend to keep you out a lot longer. Excuse me. So optimistic Darius will play, though.
Jalen Reeves-Maybin with his neck.
He came back last week and played with that injury. Only took one defensive snap, but he had like 20 special team snaps. So he should be okay as well.
Finally, Bruce Ellington with his back.
Yeah, he went in and out of last week's game. And the concerning part about that is that Ellington has a long injury history. And so he's someone we'll need to watch and see if they limit. But he played half the offensive snaps. So.
33 snaps, 51% of all snaps.
So they
second highest graded wide receiver.
And he did, yeah, he played well. I think he can be a force in this offense. You can see he's still learning it. But he fits in really good. He fills a gap that they needed after moving on from Golden Tate.
All right, moving on to the additions and subtractions from last week. First, Andy Jones, he was added before the Panthers game, but after the podcast from last week.
Played real well, I thought, too. Not as much in the receiving department, but his blocking was really on point. He had a crackback block on a linebacker that freed up Kerryon Johnson for that his rushing touchdown in the first quarter. And he had some plays on special teams as well. It was a nice... nice promotion for Andy Jones. He got he was an active wide receiver over Brandon Powell, I think mostly because of his role on special teams and that blocking capability.
Worth noting, Kenny Galladay, of course, the number one ranked receiver of this group from Pro Football Focus, with Bruce Ellington second, Andy Jones third, TJ Jones last.
TJ had a rough game. I've been asked about TJ, and you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago when Ellington was added, that we think Ellington will be the third receiver when he's ready. I don't think TJ Jones is made to start, and he's not made to really be a consistent contributor, even in that third role. He's going to be asked to start while Marvin is on the shelf, but when Marvin returns, I think TJ will go back to that wide receiver four role.
All right. Next guy being added. Big news.
Happened hours ago.
Just happened a couple hours ago. People will remember the name. Don Carey, back in the fold. Done selling real estate. He's back in the NFL.
You know, he's listed as a defensive back because of his ability to play safety and kind of a nickel corner. But really, his value is on special teams. For a long time, he was Detroit's number one special teamer. And that kind of transitioned over to Longa the last couple of years, and then Carey was let go. Jacksonville picked him up this offseason. He didn't last there. And it's nice to see him back in Honolulu Blue. Even though the special teams was improved, it's always nice to have players that succeed in that area on your roster.
All right, and finally, Eric hinted at this earlier. Eric Lee waived.
Yeah, you know, Eric Lee is
inactive on Sunday.
He was, and we've talked about how he has been transitioning between him and Kerry Hyder. Have been taking turns on who's active and who's not. But what we've seen from Hyder the last 2 weeks is he's come into that nose tackle pass rushing role on third downs when the Lions want to go NASCAR. Something he did earlier in the season, then they went away from him, gave that role to Deshaun Hand. Now they've given it back to Hyder, and with that and Ansa's health getting better, it made Eric Lee expendable. Now, they also, and we didn't write an article about this, they also cut Horace Richardson from the practice squad, giving them an open spot. Very likely that will go to Eric Lee when he clears waivers.
All right, moving on to the takeaways from the Panthers game. The first one is from the obvious bucket. Kenny Galladay is the Lions' number one receiver.
Yeah, I mean, even with Marvin back, he still should be the guy. Like, Marvin is still the experienced guy, and Marvin is still, you know, the name and the personality. But this offense really should run through the young guys, and that's Kenny Galladay and Kerryon Johnson. You know, that touchdown catch.
The future is now.
It was amazing. Yeah, it really is. If they're going to turn the page on this offense and they're going to, if you're going to make it, you know, about your younger guys and you're going to move on from Golden Tate, then you really have to hand this over to Kerryon and Kenny. And, I mean, that touchdown catch was spectacular.
All right. Run defense is for real. And Carolina didn't run the ball very well.
Yeah, and Carolina was the seventh-ranked team in yards, averaging 130.2 yards a game. They were third in DVOA by Football Outsiders. Yet, Lions held them to 56 yards.
Yeah, on 16 carries.
3.5 is the average. And
no TDs.
Yeah, McCaffrey came in and was doing well. We had talked about him being a guy who scored 7 touchdowns in the previous 3 weeks. And
he's been big in fantasy the last few weeks.
And then he disappeared against Detroit.
Running. He still had 110 total yards. Sure. Still had 57 through the year. But they limited him. He didn't score touchdowns. He didn't have any really big plays.
Yeah. And what we've seen is we've seen this shift since the snacks. Since the snacks trade, where they've really tightened the screws on this run defense. Now, when they acquired snacks, they were 31st in run defense. Now they're 25th, and if they were 32nd for a longest time, because remember they gave up so
hemorrhaging yards.
Yeah, so many big plays in the beginning of the year. They were like 200 yards behind everyone else in the first 3 weeks. So, like, it was going to take a ton of effort to just even get to a salvageable statistical, like, ranking in their run defense. But when you're holding teams like Carolina to 56 and you're holding Chicago under that, Chicago, again, the 10th rushing defense in the league, they, you're gonna start moving up those charts pretty quick. So, Snacks has really been a difference, and it's not just been – I mean, Snacks is phenomenal in his own right, but what he has allowed other people to do around him has really helped the team as a unit really shut down that run.
All right, Brooks Hitchcock has a question. Quote, did we really shut down McCaffrey, or did Carolina scheme him out a little bit?
You know, teams are scheming around the run defense now that the run defense is showing up well. They're having to go to the air because that's where they can find some success. But make no mistake, they are focused on shutting the run down. And so I would say yes, their goal was to shut McCaffrey down last week, just like their goal was to shut down Cohen and Howard, thank you, the week before. And so, yeah, I mean, they like Joe said, he still got his chunk of the pie because of his involvement in the passing game. But yeah, this is a noticeable shift in how they're playing defense.
All right, so this is not totally run defense, but it's worth the shoehorn in right here. Devin Kennard with 6 sacks and Jared Davis with 4 are now at their career highs for sacks, both of them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of guys. I think only Ansa and maybe Christian Jones are the only two that haven't set career highs at this point. They've really.
Ansa's got a way to go. Yeah. What if he pulls off 3 or 4 games with 3 in a game?
You know, like last year?
Yeah, which is very possible.
Yeah, could be.
All right. Out of the Usain Bolt category, Darius Slay achieved 21.89 miles per hour during his rundown to form a Maryland wide receiver, DJ Moore.
I mean, you know, we've talked a little bit about this off air here, and it's been a thing on Twitter as well, that that play was so vital to the game. You know, the effort to run that play down and the effort to hit that extra gear and the effort to make that tackle, which then leads to a field goal, which then is missed, it's a 7-point swing in that game. And that was really a huge turning point in the game for the Lions. If he doesn't make that play, we're probably
Carolina ends up winning, probably.
Probably, right? And so when we look at people talking about the Lions quitting and, like, they're giving up on the season, this is the play that needs to be pointed to. Because it wasn't just Slay who got injured having to make that tackle. He injured himself because he had to lay out to catch DJ Moore. Look, DJ Moore ran a 4.42 at the combine. He's a fast guy. And Slay has the speed to catch him, and he did. But he had to sell out his body in order to make that play, and it altered the game. But it wasn't just Slay.
Yeah, because Carolina didn't end up scoring at all.
Correct.
They clanged one off the goalpost.
Yeah, completely altered the game. But it wasn't just Slay. If you watch the play, you can see Jared Davis almost make the tackle. When DJ Moore caught the ball at the 20, Jared Davis was on the 3. And DJ Moore ran a little bit laterally and then cut it upfield. And Jared Davis went from the 3, and by the time they got to the 30, he was already within a couple yards of DJ Moore. And then he went step for step with him from 130 all the way to the other 30, and he was actually closing on DJ Moore. This is a 4-4-2 first-round wide receiver.
Yeah, but NFL contract, NFL hunger. Like, he's eating now, slowing down. Some nice steak dinners.
But Jared Davis is a 240-pound linebacker, and he was running him down. And, again, that's an effort play. So I don't want to hear this narrative of the team has quit. Because
well, slow down. They had a couple no-show games, and they played very
well. No, I get it. I get it.
They put in a lot of effort on Sunday, and they got a win. I'm not going to take that away from them, but I don't know. I don't think people were insane saying that they had quit because there were a couple games where they didn't even show up to play.
But have not showing up in that, you know, in a game and not executing versus quitting on the season are two very different things to me. And it wasn't just Jared Davis. There were five other defensive backs trying to run.
I don't think anybody's arguing the and plate it, with you.
No, I think people are. No, I think people are arguing that the effort isn't there, I guess, and I disagree with that, and I think this play illustrates that. One other note on the play, and then we'll move on. Deshaun Hand was within 10 yards of catching him as well, and Hand was at the 0. He was at the goal line when that ball was made, and he still tried to track him down as well. So the effort's there. There were 9 Lions defenders all going after that ball with veracity.
All right, next up, you'll like this topic. Tracy Walker gets his first interception.
PFF's top-graded linebacker, defensive player, he had a phenomenal day. Only ended up having like 25 snaps or something like that, right? What did he have? 15 snaps, like 25%. But he still made a play on the ball. He still ripped it away. This kid, he's got the right attitude. He's got
ball skills.
Thank you. He's got a nose for it. He can go after it. He's got the length. He's got the anticipation. He's still learning, but this kid is for real, and he's going to get more playing time moving forward, and he is probably starting next year. So if you are slow to jump on the hype train, now is the time.
All right, and finally, the special teams turned it around.
My goodness, what a big shift in
special teams. What a difference a firing of a coach makes.
Right. Their punt return yards, -1. They allowed -1 punt return yards on the game, and they kicked 3 of them that they downed inside the 10. My favorite play of the game was the first punt that they had, where Sam Martin drops it inside the 5, and it bounces laterally. Now, Mike Ford, who is an undrafted rookie, just called up for this game, recognizes this. And in the locker room, he talked about this. He said when he saw the punt returner's arms go limp, he knew the ball was going to hit the ground, and he knew he had a chance to make a play. So when he saw the arms go limp, he went past the receiver, the returner, and he went to anticipate the ball bouncing. The ball bounces. He is the first to the ball. He dives to catch the ball and slow it down, but his momentum is carrying him towards the end zone. He recognizes that, and he lets go of the ball and pushes it slightly in towards the field of play. He careens over the end zone, but he's not touching the ball, which would have resulted in a touchback. Allows Tavon Wilson to down it at the 2. It's an incredibly heady play for an undrafted rookie in his first career game, in his first special teams appearance. Very, very smart play. And it speaks to, he made other plays like this as well. We talked about Ford in training camp, and I talked about how I thought he was a draftable player and he deserves to play in the NFL. This is the kind of things that keep you in the NFL when you make plays like that.
All right, finally, Scott Anderson. Do you think the special team switch of coaches has anything to do with a better game? It sure did change where we started from in my eyes. Have not seen anyone talking about that yet. You know, it's easy to forget about the special teams coach getting fired and being replaced. Go ahead.
In our studs and duds at Lions Wire, that was one of our studs, the special teams unit. I wrote an article on Mike Ford. I talked about his play and that special teams play. Jeff Risden did three immediate takeaways, and he talked about special teams as well. But it hasn't been a feature part of anybody's talking points, for sure. It's more been like kind of subtlety talking points amongst the media. But I agree with Scott. This was a shift, and I do think sometimes it, like Joe said, it takes a coaching change to make that difference. But let's see if
we'll see if it has a long lasting change.
Exactly,
it's a swift kick in the pants, and maybe that was part of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe a fresh set of eyes are good too. The key is sustaining it over now a half of a season.
If they can sustain it, then we know it was the coaching.
All right. Thursday, Chicago Bears, Thanksgiving. Lions look to win their 38th Thanksgiving game. The betting line, the Bears are favored by 4 points.
Boo.
Yep. We got the refs, Brad Allen, his fifth year. 12.33 penalties per game. Average in the league is 13.1. So they want this game moving along. They want to get to the Cowboys game as fast as possible.
Well, it's the first game, yeah.
But and also, you know what? I've noticed this, and I think the game ended a couple of minutes after 4 on Sunday. This Lions team, win or lose, they play pretty fast.
Yes.
They're like Doug Fister out there. You know, they get through these games quickly.
Yeah, they do.
And it was all the first quarter this past Sunday because both teams only had one possession. They were both very surgical getting down the field. Both teams scored. Wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, both teams scored. Carolina for sure scored.
Yep. And then Lions answered.
Yeah, Lions came right back and answered and scored. So I don't know. It's just a weird takeaway from the season that they're not chewing up loads of time playing these games. So we got the CBS team on Thursday. We get Jim Nance and Tony Romo with Tracy Wolfson, who went to the University of Michigan, much like Eric. We like Nance and Romo. I'm not the biggest Romo fan. You know, he's fine. Like, I'd rather have Aikman than Romo. If I had my choice of Dallas Cowboys to be the color analyst for the game, it would be Aikman first, and then I guess Romo second. Daryl Moose Johnson's way down.
I think people really like
Witten's
Romo.
Witten's probably fourth. There's got to be a third out there somewhere.
People really dislike Jason Witten.
Well,
he's not doing great on Monday.
It's a tough job to have. You know, sure. Dennis Miller got complained off the air a long time ago, and that goes all the way back to the 70s. You know, OJ couldn't even make it as an analyst on Monday Night Football back in the 80s.
There's a lot of things.
And he was beloved at the time.
Yeah, well, at the time.
Well, I mean, he still might be now. A lot of Bills fans still like him.
That's terrible.
All right. So we all know what happened 2 weeks ago. There was a drubbing at the hands of the Bears, 34-22. Score wasn't as close as the game actually was played. Bears coming off a big win on Sunday Night Football against the Vikings. Very emotional. A lot of defense. Crazy though that they had to play that late game. Now
they were flexed into it.
Well, because these are good teams. This is might be the chase for the division title.
But knowing that
they would have to turn around and play Thursday, at 12:30. It's not like, first of all, they were at home for that game, and if they're flying, I'm guessing they're flying in. That's an hour flight. You know, it's not like it's an arduous journey for them to get here.
Time changes only an hour.
They probably won't even get off that time. You know, they'll tell them to keep all their clocks the same or whatever.
Well, because it's a 12:30, so it's a little bit earlier.
It's an 11:30 game to them.
For them, yep. So that's a tough because you're not getting a good night's sleep on Sunday for them. And whereas the Lions did. Lions went home and got a good night's sleep. So will it make a difference?
3 days later. I really don't think this stuff makes a difference. It used to. Back when they all flew commercially, when there were old style of buses and the roads were slick and the chairs are too close to each other and these are giant men, yes, then all that travel and the lack of time made a big difference. Everybody was smoking. probably getting drunk. Like that still happens a little bit, but not nearly as much as it used to. These guys are taught to like treat their bodies like temples. They're all on sleep schedules. They're all on these special eating schedules. I don't think it has as big of an effect as it used to.
I think Thursday is a big change. I just don't think the Sunday night as opposed to Sunday.
It's a quick turnaround.
It's huge, but it could be. Yeah, yeah.
And most of the time Thursday games are bad. This year, the games have been a little bit better. And part of that's because better teams are playing on Thursday.
Sure.
But at the same time, I think, the strength and conditioning coaches and nutritionists are kind of figuring out how to handle all of it. They're probably bringing in sleep doctors and everything, too. And the Lions, they're bringing in their voodoo man to work his magic on. Or a woman. I should be fair.
Yeah, voodoo like, witch.
Yeah, maybe a witch or a warlock. And they're going to be working on Cody Park again. Hopefully they didn't use up all the juju. Not Juju Smith-Schuster.
Well, the Bears kicked two field goals, but on their extra point tries, they went for two both times.
But so. The crowd went wild when Parkey made the kick. They loved it.
The field goal?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, but yeah, they went for two, which is an interesting strategy. And
it's the Tomlin strategy. Pittsburgh did it all the time.
Sure, sure. But it'll be interesting to see.
And I'm sure MIT has a paper somewhere stating that you should do it every time.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they do.
Because if you convert them 56% of the time, well, then you're getting more than a point on average with every touchdown.
Well, isn't there a school of thought that it's like 4th and 1? You have like an 80% chance of converting.
Yeah, you should always go even deep in your own territory.
Right. It was like 85% or something ridiculous like that.
There should be a few control high schools or colleges out there that are forced to do that so everybody could see for a season what happens.
You know, like, this team can't punt all year, you know? Like, it should be like a little wacky promotion the team does. The team knows they're going to be bad, you know? But Rutgers should do this stuff. Be like, yeah, you know what? We're not going to punt this year. Like, you know, we got all our nerds. You know, they're going to come up with these things for us to try, and we're going to do a different one every year just to get a few more fans to the game. It might work out. You never know.
I'm for it.
All right. Now that we've finished babbling about that, the big part of the story, the big storyline is Trubisky's injured. I really think he's going to play, and I think there's no question about it.
They're very much 50-50. From what I'm gathering.
He's going to play. He's going to play Thanksgiving. They're 7-3.
Well,
first place.
There's some reporters that are saying, because it's his throwing shoulder, and it was injured late in the game, that he wasn't expected to throw on Monday because of it, but they were expecting him to throw today. And because he didn't throw today, they're expecting Chase Daniel to be the starter. There's another school of thought of Bears reporters that are saying, an extra day of rest could cure all, and he could be ready to go. But there's some legit concern that he is going to be available, or he is not going to be available. They don't know. It's but the thing is we talked about this last time we previewed the Bears. Trubisky isn't the guy winning them games. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like against the Vikings, he was 20 of 31 for 165 yards. You know what I mean? Like. He's not.
You know who he looked great against? The Lions 2 weeks ago.
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. A Darius Slay Lions, right? Darius Slay-less Lions, right? So I think there's things that the Lions can do to offset if Trubisky plays. Remember, Trubisky threw two interceptions against the Vikings as well. So. You almost want Trubisky to play, especially if that bum shoulder is really bothering him. If he's worse than 20 of 31 for 165 and two interceptions, like, let him play.
It's the Brian Lewerke theory. Like, well, you know, they would rather have the bad one play, the one who's injured. He's going to play worse than the backup.
Well, I might be okay with that.
All right, Scott McAvoy asks, which will cause the Lions more problems on Thursday? Tight ends over the middle or running backs in the flats? Well, I know they're probably fairly even.
I think it's more tight ends, personally. They've done well to guard against the tight end in recent weeks. But,
Greg Olsen he had the touchdown, but it was only one. He only had the one catch, right?
I don't have the numbers, but that sounds right. We talked about this last time.
Ed Dixon didn't do anything. Finally.
Well, Ed Dixon's in Seattle.
Oh, remember? That's right. He's with Seattle now. Yeah. But he was with Carolina.
Correct. Yeah. But we talked about this last time we previewed the Bears, is that Trey Burton creates a matchup problem for the Lions. And he did well.
2 for 9 with the touchdown. Right?
And so Trey Burton did well against the Lions last time. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's a bigger problem than Cohen is. Now, passes to the flat, Cohen is still going to be a problem. But I think the change here will be the Lions are going to have the same game plan up front to try and stop the run. But instead of using man coverage, which they did almost exclusively against Chicago, I'm expecting more zone coverage, which we saw against Carolina. That zone coverage option will prevent the big plays. It'll allow them to anticipate the ball. It'll allow them to cut in on routes that can create interceptions like Tracy Walker's. And with Darius Slay back, it gives them another healthy body in that secondary that plays at a high level. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them focus on stopping the running backs again and then then change up the coverages for the secondary and then try and bait Trubisky into throwing more interceptions.
Useless stat, Trey Burton, 1 for 9 against the Vikings, but that's a totally different defense.
Yeah.
Totally different team.
Yeah.
Just note, Chris Robbins, Lions ran 6 defensive back sets against Carolina to help shut down Christian McCaffrey, and it worked. Could we do the same thing against Terry Cohen this week and find similar success defensively?
I do think that they will have a similar defense this week as they did against Carolina. But the caveat is that Jordan Howard is a different animal than McCaffrey. And so you have to be able to account for him. So I don't know if you can go 6 defensive backs as often.
No, they can watch personnel sets.
Yeah, that's what they're really going to have to do, is they're going to have to watch personnel sets. And when they go to Cohen, then I could see more 6 defensive backs in kind of umbrella coverages to guard against that. They threw some things out there defensively that were less aggressive, and they ended up being more impactful against Carolina.
All right. Next storyline, it's all about the Bears' defense.
Yeah, I mean,
fantastic.
I mean, look, against the Vikings, they had 7 pass deflections, 2 sacks, hit the quarterback twice. It caused 3 turnovers, and 2 interceptions and a fumble, and 1 interception and 1 fumble each went for scores. The Bears' offense isn't winning them games. It's their defense that's winning them games. And that's going to be the problem for Detroit, is it's how do you make hay against the Bears' defense? Because you can find ways to limit the Bears' offense and keep it close, but you also have to find a way to score. And trying to find a way to score against this Bears' defense is really going to be a massive challenge for the Lions.
All right, Brandon Kerr, what do you expect Patricia and the Lions staff to scheme differently in going to play the Bears after now seeing them twice in a row in less than 3 weeks? Not in a row, technically.
Yeah, twice in 3 weeks.
All right, and we also saw them take apart Minnesota nationally to boot.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the Bear. It's the defense is really what it is. We've kind of touched on Brandon's question here from a schematic standpoint about how to play that umbrella coverage, but the real trick is, how do you account for Kerryon Johnson not being in the game?
All right. Craig Boyer, how will the Lions' run game change without Kerryon? How many snaps for Zenner? I think more than we think. I think we're going to see more Zenner than we would expect. Because like you said about in your little Reddit thing today about LeGarrette Blount, he might be done.
God, what, 22 carries for 16 yards over 3 or 4 weeks now?
He's down on gas, and now here we are with the quick turnaround. If you want to point to the quick turnaround, that's going to be good for LeGarrette Blount.
My assumption is LeGarrette Blount will get the start.
Well, yeah. And there's tradition there. He is the best running back all time out of that group of 3 that we'll see on Thursday.
Yep. And then I think they will turn to Theo.
We wish.
They will turn to Theo Riddick early to try and stretch the Bears' defense out. I do think they will platoon between Kerryon and Blount early, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Zenner get carries. Now, when Zenner gets carries, It's all about making hay with them. I've said making hay twice this podcast.
It's fine.
I've never said it before today.
Yeah, go to the
here
well.
I am. I'm saying it a couple of times.
Well, I want to hear it one more time before we're done.
So if Zenner can get hot, you know, which we've seen him do, like Dallas a couple years back, right? If he can make...
he's good for 60 yards on his best day.
60 yards would be phenomenal.
Very nice.
You know what I mean? And so... if he can get hot with his touches and he can actually fall forward instead of gaining 0.7 yards a carry like Blunt has been, then I think they'll go back to him. And if he continues to produce, then I think they'll start to lean on him more as the game goes on. But he has to show early that he can gain 2-3 yards at a time. Now, I'm not expecting him to start busting first downs and 2-3 yards. Give me a couple yards and then show me he can do it again. Show me he can do it again. If he can do that, his snaps will go up.
All right, David Griffiths, we already kind of touched on this. Why is Blunt so ineffective, and why do you think that Jim Bob Cooter has a plan to change that? And do you think Cooter has a plan to change that?
Unfortunately, in the NFL...
Eric thinks he's done. It's over.
Unfortunately, in the NFL, when a running back's career is over, it is harsh and it is quick. And... we're kind of seeing this happen, right? Like, he went from being somewhat productive over the first half of the season where we liked what we saw, and then after the bye, he has been just stagnant. And it's almost like the switch just fell off, you know? And maybe he can use his vision to hit a hole, but, I mean, he had some whopping holes that he couldn't hit. I mean, they were right in front of him, and he still tried to bounce them outside. And he doesn't have the agility to do what he used to do. And that agility, as soon as he starts going laterally, it's over. He needs to be north-south almost exclusively at this point. And if Jim Bob's going to do something, they need to create a hole in front of him in the A-gap and just let him run towards the A-gap every time.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Blunt will have 54 yards on 9 carries. It'll be busting big chunks out whenever they need it.
If Blunt gets 54 and Zenner gets 60, we win.
Well, all right.
So. I mean, honestly.
All right, Cal. What's to expect from the O-line this week? Nobody knows. Although I have a feeling it's not going to be great. It seems that they're the most inconsistent group now. Either Stafford is running for his life or he barely gets touched. I believe we will only go as far as this O-line can take us. In protecting Stafford and allowing holes in the run game.
You know, there was a shift in their approach, right? They went from having these long breaking plays against the Bears the last time they faced them. And, you know, who's the team? We played Seattle before that. We had a similar type thing where we saw all of these, like, long plays that just took forever to unfold.
But we played Minnesota the week before.
Okay, yeah, and then Seattle week before. Thank you. That's the one I was missing.
It was the 10-sack game.
Yeah.
We forgot about that one.
But again, from a play-calling standpoint, we've talked the last couple of weeks about the play-calling not being effective. Now, of course, finding success on the run, on the ground, in the running game is what helps alleviate pressure on your quarterback, but it's about how quick Stafford can get the ball out as well. If he can get the ball out faster, then he's going to find more success against pressure. Justin Rogers tweeted out a tweet today that said, in the previous weeks, Stafford was throwing the ball from the snap to the when he released it, he was throwing it 2.66 seconds, which was around the middle of the league for quarterbacks. But last week against the Panthers, he was getting rid of it at 2.24 seconds, so almost a full half second faster. And that, even though it doesn't seem significant, that's
very
considerably significant. That was the fastest of all the quarterbacks last week. And that's by design. And if you want to eliminate pressure, this is how you do it. You get that ball out quick. If you can't run, though, and you start getting the ball out quick and the Bears start to scoot up, well, now you have to be able to go over the top and go deep to keep them honest. And so that's when you're going to need to have the proper play at the proper time and Kenny Golladay executing, because really he's your deep threat.
All right. We do our predictions now. I have the lead.
Can we save it? I need a minute.
We can save it.
Let me save it for a second. You do have the lead. I did win last week.
You won last week. I will have to go first. Back. So it's your honor. I was going to go first. No, it's good you caught that.
Yeah.
All right. Podcast questions. First, Will N. Dowd, he asks, doesn't Jim Bob Cooter deserve some credit for making Stone Soup with the skilled position players currently being played? No. Because he couldn't make it happen when he had all of his best skill position players and a high-priced offensive line and big investment offensive line. Too little, too late, Jim Bob. What could you say? Now, and I don't want to be all doom and gloom, but you got to produce at some point. Now I get, yes, okay, he's kind of producing. They scratched out 20 points on Sunday. But, when you had all your guys, why couldn't you score 31 every now and again? They didn't. And he wasn't able to do it.
Yeah. No, if I'm going to give him credit for anything, it's for it's for the stat I just mentioned. He's designing plays to get the ball out quicker. And really, that was the best adjustment that the Lions could make. Beyond that, though, I don't know if he's... I try to stay optimistic and not harp too much on him, but he has called too many questionable games.
Stinkers.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yep. All right. Steven Misilowski. Matthew Stafford, in a recent interview, stated he's done waiting for these longer plays to develop and taking the shorter routes and taking the short yardage. Is that him getting fed up with the Jim Bob Cooter play calls, his offensive line, or sick of getting hit and taking the blame?
Yes.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of all three of those things.
Right.
Lucky for him this season, he hasn't been getting blown up with hits. Like, he's not taking big hits on these sacks. He's been fortunate, and you know that Alex Smith can give him a phone call if he likes.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure he's been a little fed up with the offensive line, and of course with Jim Bob. I don't know how he couldn't be, although he doesn't really show it.
No, and he's not going to. And I talked to Steven about this, and I tried to find the interview, but unfortunately, I couldn't put my hands on it to get a good idea of exactly the context of it, but to I guess accurately answer this question. But yeah, I'm sure he is frustrated with getting hit, and I don't think he cares as much about taking the blame. But he's a part of this offense, I believe, and he gets to give his input, and I think he's part of the reason that there was an adjustment made last week.
All right, Richard, why doesn't Cooter use Brandon Powell in the slot? Golladay, Powell, and Riddick would give the Bears fits on Thursday. I don't know. In theory, yes, but in practice, Brandon Powell has not been great in the opportunities he's been afforded.
The biggest, the first reason why is Bruce Ellington, right? Bruce Ellington is there to take the slots and snap instead of Brandon Powell. And if we look back to Brandon Powell's the previous week where he was active, he was you could often see him having to check in with the other receivers or with Stafford so that he understood what his route that he was supposed to be running was.
I mean, which is fine, too. He's a rookie. You know, he's not going to know everything at this point.
Sure. But if he's having to check in, that means his learning curve is probably not where it needs to be. So while he may have talent, mentally he might not be ready yet. And that was one of the concerns about him earlier in the season was just trying to get himself ready to go. So I think Ellington is in his way, and I think there's a mental capacity with the playbook that he's still developing. Could he be something down the road? Sure, but it doesn't look like he's quite ready to be a contributor yet.
All right, Blake Berry. Did Kenny Wiggins get better, or is Carolina much worse than the Bears and Vikings?
Well, Carolina is not as good of a pass-rushing team as the Bears or the Vikings are. So that's going to help the offensive line. But Wiggins was he was a good contributor in the run game. And overall, I thought the whole offensive line played well in the pass game. So I do think he played better. Could he? I don't know if it was his best game of the year, possibly, but you know, he, we talked about this last week, when he is preparing to start and he is preparing to play, he seems to be a little bit more confident, and he seems to have a little higher execution. And so I do think he is getting better, but I mean, is he an NFL starter? I that's still to be determined, I guess.
All right. Lyle Clough, he got sick of having me get his name wrong weekly, so he told us how to pronounce it. Why do I see so much Tavon Wilson hate? And I haven't brought this up in a while, and it needs to be brought up. If you go around asking fans for all 32 teams what player they hate the most on their team, 95% of the teams are going to, or the fans with these teams are going to come back with a defensive back. People just hate defensive backs getting burned all the time. This is what happens. The other 5% is probably the QB. Mm-hmm. You know, we might get a few of that here.
Sure. So, no, we do.
But for the most part, like, it seems that people just get angry at defensive backs because when they make mistakes, it's more glaring.
Well, you know, I think for a team that plays three safeties on half the defensive snaps, you've got Quinn, who people love, even though they know he's tapering off. You've got Diggs, who is at his peak right now, playing well. And then you have a young rookie who's making plays in Tracy Walker, who is playing the fourth role because Tavon Wilson is kind of in his way. If Tavon Wilson's not here, then the rookie would be there. And it's kind of like the backup goalie in hockey and the backup quarterback, right? The guy who's the young guy who we all think has potential is sitting there on the bench. So who do we want to get rid of? The guy who's in his way. And I think Tavon is the guy that people see as in his way. He doesn't do anything spectacular, but he does his job well. Like I mentioned that earlier on that special teams play, he was the guy who made the stop at the two. So he's not having a bad year by any stretch, but I don't think he has the upside that that Walker has, and I think people would like to see Walker on the field more. And maybe that's just me subconsciously putting my own desires in place of others.
All right, Alex Stahl. Follow me down this wormhole. Say the Lions beat the Bears on Thursday. Let's say they lose to the Rams, because come on, it's the Rams. If they win out after that, Arizona, Buffalo, Minnesota, and Green Bay, they finish 9-7. If they finish 9-7, what are the chances they make the playoffs? All right, and he also notes, or this might be you also noting.
No, he noted this.
Seattle, Carolina, Atlanta, Chicago, Minnesota, Green Bay, Dallas, Washington, Philadelphia are still in the mix. All right, go ahead. Well, you know, like, of course they have a chance. I don't think it's great, and we can break this down in a second. Say what you're going to say.
No, go ahead.
All right. Seattle's 5-5. They would hold the tiebreaker over us. Carolina, we would have the tiebreaker over them, but we're trailing them. They're 6-4, but 6-4 is kind of putting them on pace for 9-7, maybe 10-6. Mm-hmm. Though 10-6 obviously didn't make it. Atlanta's not in great shape. They're at 4-6, and no word on what the tiebreaker would be there. Chicago's likely going to win the division. When you say Chicago, Minnesota, and Green Bay, one of those three teams is going to win the division. We'll say likely it's the Bears. In that case, Minnesota currently holds the tiebreaker against... Oh, they don't.
We beat them, didn't we?
No.
Oh, no, we didn't. No, I'm sorry.
10-sack game.
Sorry.
They currently hold the tiebreaker against us, but we do have a chance to beat them again. But they have that pesky tie, so do the Packers hanging around.
To get in, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, keep going.
All right, I just wanted to run this down real quick. Dallas, Washington, and Philadelphia, one of them is going to win the division. Well, it's probably likely Dallas now, and they would have the tiebreaker over us anyways. Washington has a game on Dallas, but now they're going to be playing Colt McCoy the rest of the year. So things aren't looking great. Currently, the two wild card teams are the Panthers and the Vikings, all right, with the Seahawks and the Cowboys following them at 5-5, both of them having the tiebreaker over us. We have a big mountain to climb.
Yeah.
And if the sixth playoff team in the NFC is 9-7 and we're 9-7, odds are we're not going to have the tiebreaker over them.
Well, the key is It's not just getting to 9-7, but it's getting to 9-7 by beating the right teams. And
sure. This already points out they're just going to lose to the Rams, and right. then they'll be 1-1 against Minnesota and 2-0 against Green Bay, so they have the tiebreaker.
But let's say if Minnesota can squeak in, even with the loss to us, we'd have to split with Chicago as well. You know what I mean? In order for this to even be viable, we have to split with Chicago, we have to split with Minnesota, and we have to sweep Green Bay. Then we have to hope. Then the biggest concern, the biggest obstacle then would be Seattle.
So
yeah, you've got two teams in your division that one of them's getting in, another one to worry about, and Seattle, and you got to win all the other games. So yeah, there's still a mountain to climb, but you got to win, and you got to win the right games in order to do it.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Outside chance.
It's not going to happen. All right, defend the den. Is it crazy to think the Lions beat the Bears and Rams to get to 500, only to knock themselves out of the playoffs with the losses to the Cardinals and Bills? I like the way he's thinking. You know, I don't think that's going to happen, but it would be a Lions thing to do.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, Hail Mary. How do the roster changes this season compare to those of the past? It seems like we let some talent go while hanging on to some players that aren't quite living up to their potential.
Yeah, it's a difficult offseason. A lot of they shed some of the higher priced guys
Sean shed.
Well, technically they did, but then they brought him back. Yeah, but they did get rid of higher contracts in order to bring in more depth. Look, you have to establish a foundation of players before you can build, and it goes against what we've seen from the last few GMs, who sign the splashy guy and go after the talent, but then don't have a core foundation, and that's one of the reasons that teams fall apart. Quinn is taking an opposite approach. So, yeah, there was a definite change. But moving into this offseason, now that you have somewhat of a foundation, you have to start spending money and going after these high-priced guys.
All right, Jamie Johnson. Why does it seem like Detroit can't hit on second round picks? Now there's a long tradition of this.
Well, and we've talked, and I talked to Jamie about this earlier, because I think this is a concept that people have. But if we look at the last six second round picks, you have Kerryon Johnson, A'shaun Robinson, and Darius Slay, all picked in the second round. Whereas you have Tease, who busted, of course, Amir, who has been traded away, and Van Noy.
Well, Van Noy ended up being good somewhere else.
Right. But,
or at least decent.
But you know, and of the picks that Bob Quinn made, two of them are starting, right? So I get that, and I only left this in for Jamie, and Jamie and I talked about this. I'm not leaving this in to say anything bad, because this is a concept that a lot of people have, but Tease was a bad pick in the second round, but Amir really wasn't bad at the time. Now, he hasn't panned out now, but, you know, there's not a lot of players. Like, the players that stick around into their fourth year are, it's fewer and fewer, right? So, yeah, they've missed on a lot of second-round picks, but they also have three starters that have come from it as well. And I think, you know, we focus so much on the negative that sometimes we overlook some other things. And this is not just Jamie. This is a lot of fans in general, which is why I left the question in.
All right, I think we should skip Brad's question. That's going to be a long one.
Yeah.
Dino and Derek. Derek asked a similar question to Dino. What potential free agents do the Lions go after in 2019? Up to $75 million cap space and a whole bunch of one-year contracts going. Bye-bye.
Yeah, the big thing right now is defense. We've talked about this before. Predicting free agents at this point of the year is it's very difficult, because a lot of things can happen between now and March. But you know, if you're looking at positions and you're looking at talented players that might be in budget, Trey Flowers is a defensive end for New England. If he makes it to free agency, he would fit into the Ansa role at a much cheaper price. And then, you know, they tried to go after some corners last year. And so if they don't get to those corners and they don't make an effort to you know, want to get one in the draft, they want somebody that is established, then you're going to have to find, you know, a free agent. And that free agent could be, what am I blanking on his name right now for? the Texans.
Jadeveon Clowney?
No, the corner from the Texans.
Oh.
Jackson, I believe, right? So you're going to have to, Kareem Jackson. I don't know why I blanked on that there. he's a guy who it's going to cost you, but he could do a lot of what the Lions want.
All right, we got to wrap it up. Kyle Klein asked, do you think Taylor Decker signs a second contract with the Lions? Just say yes or no. We'll delve into that in a later episode.
Yeah, in May, they will give him his extension into 2020.
All right. Shout-outs.
We got 4 ratings this week, bringing us up to 101 reviews. So we broke that 100 mark. So that's awesome.
That was good news.
And we got 2 awesome reviews, J.J. Stringer and then Grimace, it looks like here.
Cleverly spelled Grimace.
Right.
And I don't think that's how McDonald's spells it.
But really nice things to say. We appreciate you guys and taking the time. It was nice to break that century amount of reviews there. And so, man, hopefully we can keep bringing it for you every week.
All right. What's your score?
21-20.
Lions win?
Lions.
All right. I got, if it was 34-22 last time, I got Bears 31-23, so they're going to do a little bit better. We're out of time. Thanks, everybody, to listening. More importantly, everybody, have a great Thanksgiving. A really happy Thanksgiving. And until next week, let's go Lions.